The Final Play Podcast would like to welcome you to the following presentation of the NBA.
You ready?
Let's do it.
Playoffs are in full swing, baby.
So let's do it. Let's get into it. Hello, everyone. Welcome to the Final Play Podcast. We'll go over round one of... look, everybody calls it different. I just like calling it round one because it is technically the round one of the NBA playoffs. So everyone has
this
it.
Is, yeah,
people say quarter, semi, yeah. I don't, you know, but it's,
nah,
it's not, round
yeah,
one.
This isn't the quarters. This is, yeah, this is round one and then, yeah.
And conference semis and then conference finals. And then, yeah, that's how it should be. But we'll go over the round one. I will let you choose. Which side do we want to start, west or east?
I know you're bitterly disappointed that your boys, the Lakers, are gone. So let's start off and let's hit the West.
Oh, God damn it. Okay. I thought you were going to be nice, but I forgot.
Just to give you some time to simmer down.
I forgot which kind of person you were, but that's okay. Well, we'll start at the top with the Utah Jazz getting over the Memphis Grizzlies in 4-1. And... I mean, right off the bat, my words for this was that it felt like a foregone conclusion, as good as Memphis were in that first game.
I mean, yeah, look, Memphis in game one came out and just punched Utah in the mouth. Yeah. I guess, you know, for an 8 seed to sort of come out, you know, they've been on, you know, a little bit of an inspired run, going through the play-in games and everything, you know, beating the Spurs and then also knocking off the Warriors as well before they actually came into this playoff series against Utah. And look, they just played like an up and in your face style in that first game, and they sort of ran Utah off the 3-point line, which is one of their big weapons is the 3-pointer.
Yeah.
I think them and the Bucks and the Nets, I think, take the most threes in the league. So that's one weapon, and that's, you know, and it all comes out in the wash. You know, you might have a bit of a bad game, and you know, Utah shot only 25% from 3-point range in this game one, but it was a stirring win in Utah for this game, I thought, by Memphis.
Yeah, no, I thought the same thing. Like you just said, it was pretty simple. They just sort of punched him in the mouth, and I guess kind of took them by surprise. That's sort of how it looked for Utah. I mean, then coming through then in game two, they end up...
Let's not forget there was no Donovan Mitchell in game one as well.
Well, that's so, what I was about to say. Game two, they beat him pretty comprehensively, and that was on the back of one Donovan Mitchell. So,
and that scoreline as well, like 141-129, that's not a true reflection of the game. Like, Utah were in no danger in that game at all. And even though Memphis did score 129 points, you know, Morant goes for a franchise playoff record in 47 points, but basically doesn't get a whole lot of help
yeah.
from anybody else. Dylan Brooks was I think a big factor in this series, and sort of has put his star on the map a little
bit, so.
as a big, well, not so much, but you know, sort of like a guy that can step up in the big moments, who can help out Ja Morant. And, you know, you can hopefully they can count on him later on, you know, well, as his career develops and if he stays in Memphis. But Morant goes for 47 points. Like, it's just, but they didn't, Utah didn't look troubled in this game at all.
No. And then if you go through, to me, even in those next three games, that was the glaring difference for me, is that Utah being, and I'll keep saying it, being that I think they are the most complete squad that's in the playoffs at the moment, were in trouble because they have that complete roster and depth, and, you know, one Donovan Mitchell who's sleepily I will say Sleepley, because not many people are talking about it, but Sleepley moving into that superstar level. I don't think he's there yet.
He is ascending. His star is ascending very quickly.
Very, very rapidly. Yeah, so, look, for Memphis, but, I mean, yeah, look, they went down 4-1. They were still spirited through every game. It's not like, you know, okay, some of them were blowouts, but just Memphis in general, I thought it was a good playoff experience for them. They're an absolute young side. I was looking at, like, there's no one in that side that's over 29. Jonas Valanciunas is the oldest in that side coming into next year as well. So they're a young side.
And I like what he'd done. Like, he was, I get a lot of the times that he's going up against, you know, one of the best centers in the league, but he's still a monster on the rebounds. Like, he gets a lot of, he's almost like a, he's a better, more polished Enes Kanter. Like, he's good on the offensive rebound. He gets a lot of putbacks and things like that, but he can play with his back to the basket. And I think they might have missed a little bit of a trick there to try and use him a little bit more and a little bit better. If Morant sort of looks like he's gone off the boil a little bit, then to just try and get some, you know, not so much easy buckets, because you're going up against, a former defensive player of the year and Rudy Gobert, but you can try and stretch the floor a little bit too with Valanciunas, I think.
You can. I just don't think his touch is there.
That's Utah's Achilles heel.
It is. Memphis. I just don't think his touch is there enough to continually go to him. That's all.
Don't have to continually go to him, but you get. I mean, you can draw stuff up for him. Like, it's not just your backcourt and guys like that. Like, you can draw things up for Valanciunas, and I think he might have been underutilized a little bit in this series offensively.
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, looking at their team, so I've got this for all the teams that are out, actually. So looking ahead at their team, they're pretty good salary-wise. Their biggest salary is Jonas and Justice Winslow at $14-13 million. You know, in a salary cap of a hard, if we look at the hard salary cap of that around the 100, 125, they're only on the books for $98 million next year, because they've got, what's that, $30 million coming off in dead cap anyway, with the Gorgie Dang, Dion Waiters, their $28 million combines coming off. So they'll be able to use that next year. I'm assuming they're going to have to start looking into Ja Morant's rookie max extension contract, but...
Well, they'll have to keep a little bit up their sleeve if they want to keep the likes of, I think, you know, like Ja Morant, and if they feel the need to have to pay Dylan Brooks, maybe restructure a contract or to, you know, to try and keep him if they think that he's going to be part of their future.
Well, the other one is, and that's what I was going to ask you before we move on, what about Justice Winslow? So his next year, he's got a team option, so... is he someone they look to keep, or do you think? I don't think so.
He's been back and relatively healthy, I think, this year. Whether or not they're sort of leaning on the side of caution, he hasn't been doing a whole lot this season. I thought might have been an integral part of this sort of young core. For Memphis, but yeah, he's been a little bit of a flop in you know how high he was taken in the draft by the Heat in 2015. Like, he's, you know, he's taken 10th overall. He just hasn't looked himself. I think that the expectations on him were a little too high as he's come out. So you'd like to see him sort of. He's a tenacious defender, and he's got that sort of, you know, wide wingspan as well. So, but he really needs to develop his game, a lot more offensively.
I mean, they'll have hopefully a fresh, healthy Jaren Jackson coming back next year, because he wasn't a huge factor. But I think if they look for, I honestly quite like their side. I think their side's, you know, young, set up really nicely. Kyle Anderson chips in when he needs to. I think they need a swing person, and I don't know if they go after, I'm not saying a superstar, but definitely a possibly someone that could complement Ja Morant. And yeah, Memphis, exactly, just Memphis, exactly, aren't that team.
But that's the future. That's who they have to build around. So.
Well, Memphis, I don't know about you, but do you? They're not like a. Obviously, they're not a big, draw card team, but they're a team that not many people.
It's one of the smallest markets in the NBA.
And you don't hear players talking about wanting to go there. That's the thing. So might be hard for them
I think the only thing is there is if they sort of get that reputation of a tough, gritty side, and then you've got an ascending star in Ja Morant, maybe that's enough.
Yeah, it's possible. I mean, who knows? You could just have someone like, because we'll talk about this guy later, but no one knows what Kawhi Leonard wants to do. Imagine if he just goes, yeah, I'll go there. Cool.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Oh, man.
That'd be massive, but anyway.
World at his feet, Kawhi, if there's a failure in LA with him.
You've got your DeMar DeRozan, your Drew Holidays that are coming off contract too. So they're not too, DeMar DeRozan mightn't be too bad of a senior presence in there who can shoot and play swing.
Could be a good veteran presence. That might team
That's
nicely with him.
Actually. Yeah. Next game, next series. Speaking of Kawhi Leonard, oh my God, the Clippers end up getting over Dallas in 7 games, 4-3.
Tell me what the hell happened in this series. No home winners until game 7. It's the only time in NBA history that's ever happened in a 7-game series in the playoffs.
The only thing I could plausibly put that down to is that there was no factor. I think it's LA, there's not a lot of LA, and we'll talk about this in Lakers games actually as well. LA can't have a lot of people in that Staples Center. Glaringly can't have a lot of people in the Staples Center. And I don't know how many Clippers fans are out there, to be honest, anyway. But I thought it would be a factor for Dallas.
Any bandwagon Clippers fans out there?
I thought it'd be a factor for Dallas, and I thought that actually might have sent them over, having fans back. But you're right, it didn't. I don't know. I really can't put out why not, except for Game 7, why none of the teams could.
It was such a bizarre series. Like, would Dallas come out and win the first two games on the road, and I don't know what this series is going to be like. LA, the Clippers just looked totally off their game. Luka had a triple double in the first game. Tim Hardaway Jr. come into the starting squad instead of coming off the bench. It was just a strange sort of feel, especially those first four games.
Yeah.
And
yeah, it was.
The
whole series felt strange to me. I agree with you because it looked like, up until game 6, it looked like there was no chance that Dallas would lose that series. I mean, they were 2-0 up, and then they came back for 2, and then they blitzed that 5th game, and then I thought, okay, well, they're going to win the 6th game. And it just, that series did not make sense, not at all.
No, that's what I mean. Like, to me, I think one of the, the underlying factors in this game was, a battle of the old playoff P in Paul George and the new playoff P in Kristaps Porzingis.
Yeah. Let's talk about Kristaps.
The daggers are out for Kristaps Porzingis. And yeah, he's come out after this series and saying, I'm not really happy with my role here in Dallas. I'm not really happy about being an afterthought. It's like, what the hell do you expect, man? You've basically got one of the kids who is going to be the absolute future of the league, not just this franchise in the Dallas Mavericks, league.
Kid that could be potentially top 10, top 20 of all time. That's the way he's going.
He is just putting up like just ungodly numbers.
It's not even the numbers. It's the way he can control a game. Had his own
court vision, everything. Yeah. Shot making ability, it's unbelievable.
He rebounds well. He rebounds way better than Kristaps. So that's the glaringly. Again, I looked at the payroll. Next year they're pretty healthy as well. They've only got 90 million on the books for next year. Obviously they're going to have to look at Doncic's he's coming out of his rookie max extension contract as well, and that's going to be like 200 million. We were messaging this a couple of days ago.
That's gonna blow the books apart.
Their biggest problem is that $94 million guaranteed contract of Kristaps Porzingis, who goes all the way through to 23-24, which is a player option, which no doubt he'll keep because it's $36 million. So as many daggers as they're gonna be, you can only put Dallas. It's on Dallas that they're going to have. I don't know if anyone's gonna be able to pick up that contract or want to. And secondly, you're just gonna have to grin and bear it, and then find another piece.
I don't think they've got an option but to grin and bear it. They mortgage the future. They gave away a lot, and they gave away some first round picks to the Knicks as well, but. They've got no other choice but to just to for him, especially, obviously he still thinks, I don't know, he's still under some sort of illusion that he's a star.
When he signed that max contract, you signed that kind of money, you would think you're a star. It's his injuries and it's his efficiency, obviously, it's there. I mean, it's glaringly obvious. So I don't know. No one will take
that. That's right. It's staring everybody in the face. Like
that contract. We didn't all whinge, but they whinged about the contracts of your Chris Pauls and your Russell Westbrooks and moving those and trading those. Yeah, but those two can actually, affect a game. And clearly have affected a game. So you're happy to take those $40 million contracts on him?
For somebody his size, and we get it, he's that new stretch four. He's never shot in his career over 50% from the field.
Yeah.
So it's a worrying sign the way that they're sort of His minutes, look, if you go by minutes played in the games that he's there, he only played 43 games this year.
He's missed nearly 30
games this year. He's missed 29 games this year.
Yeah, that's for someone, again, you have to – see, that's the other thing. You want to get paid that kind of money, you have to expect people that – are going to win because that money is tied up to you. So I don't know. I think they'll have possibly like Mavericks, they'll have a bit of money to play with. I don't know who they're a weird one. I don't know because like what do you go after? Because it really like where do you – Luka, do you see him as just a floating – like he's a shooting guard, floating small forwards. I mean, he plays everywhere, but
It's the new term in the league. He's positionless.
Okay, but then where do you get what else do you get to complement him? That's my question.
I think you need somebody who can probably bang bodies down low a little bit. This going off the previous series, I think somebody like Jonas Valanciunas would be perfect. Obviously there's probably next to no chance of him going there, but a player in that sort of mold where you may be able to go downstairs to, I think they've got enough shooting on that team to be able to keep teams and to keep the floor open. I guess, you've got guys who are like super streaky as well. Like Tim Hardaway Jr. is a very streaky shooter. Like we know Porzingis can hit the three, not so much at an insanely high clip, but if he shoots anywhere between 35 and 38% from three, that's a viable option. You got guys like Jalen Brunson, Josh Richardson. They picked up Nico Melli from the Pels, And if he can get his feet back under him, yeah, he is in a low confidence, you know, way at the moment.
Maxi Kleber,
he's a good, he's a good stretch player. Well. So they've got, they're even guys that they didn't really play a lot, you know, like Trey Burke, like he's a streaky shooter.
Yeah.
So I think that it's we all know what Doncic brings. So it's I think it's just a matter of getting the right balance. I think somebody who can maybe bang bodies down low, you know, maybe a little bit better than somebody like a Maxi Kleber. You know, he's not the greatest offensive threat at all. And I guess sort of a little bit of a passenger when he's on offense, you know, just setting screens and I guess running to the hole. But I think it's somebody who could be a legitimate threat down low, and then you can play a high low type game. But a lot has to still run through what Doncic brings and his court vision.
Well, you two to stand out because I kept this all open. I'm sure some names will pop up later, but the two for Dallas that I sort of thought straight away, like you said, have that inside presence, was John Collins. He's restricted this year, so and bet against, and I don't know if he's going to get the money that he got offered at the start of the year, but John Collins, and the other one's Jared Allen from the Cavs.
Yeah, you wouldn't think that he would want to continue to sort of stay there, but I guess if the money's right for him, then he could look there. But yeah, he could be a very good complimentary piece. Obviously Luka is a terrific. Well, Allen's a great rebounder. Yeah. But Luka's, you know, not to say that his size, like Luka's what, 6'8", so it's not as if Luka is a small guy by any means. But Luka knows how to sniff out a rebound too.
Yeah, but I'm just trying to it's trying to work out who you can complement with Porzingis. That's my issue. Like, Porzingis doesn't even go in and rebound. That's the other thing. So I don't know. I don't mind Jared Allen because
I
know
it is deceptive. He averages like 8 or 9 rebounds for his career. So not to say that he's a dominant rebounder, because it's, to me, I think we've said it before as well. Like, we've seen the body transformation of somebody like, you know, we talk about Anthony Davis a lot. When he came in to the league, he was very slight, very slim, and he's been able to sort of put on some weight. Somebody like a Kevin Durant just doesn't look like that he can, you know, just hasn't got the ability to put on a lot of weight. Like, he's still a slim guy, and it looks like Porzingis could be in that mold. He might be just in that mold of it doesn't matter what sort of, you know, it's what possible. Sort of dietary regime you put him on. He just simply can't put on weight, and that could be a detriment to him.
The last name, and before we move on, Lauri Markkanen was the other one that sort of stood out, who's coming up. But he probably plays
He has had some major regression at Chicago.
And I think he plays a little bit too much.
A lot of teams are in the market for him, because I think that they obviously are in the belief that they can get the best out of Lauri Markkanen, and has got some potential there.
And he's still only 24 years old too. So.
No, that's right. He's got plenty of room to grow.
Next series was Denver beating Portland 4-2. On the back of the newly minted, during, I think it was the second last game, MVP, Nikola Jokic.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah, Jokic gets himself the first center in 21 years to win the MVP since Shaq in 2000. So, you know, congrats to him and getting the MVP for the season.
And keeping that international trend going too, of international flavor of MVPs as well, which is always good. So he's just like, Mike, if you don't get many games of certain teams, obviously during the season, depending on what ESPN and that's the like sort of put on, but generally in conference finals, any conference games, I should say, you get to see him more. And I haven't seen him as much more until sort of this. It really boggles me what he can do. It really boggles me, and I'm not just talking about his court vision. It's his shot, because he's so tall, and that shot from 3-point line. I would love to see how high that's in the air, but it's such a beautiful
it's
shot.
It's got a massive arc on it, and it's not even a quick shot either. But it doesn't have
who's
to be
go,
a quick
who's
shot
touch
because
it?
That's right. You simply can't get anywhere near it.
You can't. No one can touch it.
It's impossible.
Look, Portland were there. Portland started well. I mean, they won that first game pretty comprehensively.
I think Denver. I don't think they. Yeah, they were as well prepared. Not so much physically, but I think mentally to deal with Damian Lillard and what he sort of just the fuel that he provides for Portland. Just in every regard to the game, like he is just he's unbelievable. Like he had 34 points in game one. Game two, he had 42. Like he just had one of the most unbelievable sort of, I guess not so much six game playoff runs because once again Portland have been bounced in the first round again for the fourth time in 5 years. So you go all the way back to 2017, you know, swept by the Golden State Warriors. The next year, 2018, swept by the New Orleans Pelicans, which I think was a huge, huge upset, you know, for the way that Portland was playing that year. Pretty sure that was a 3-6 matchup. And for New Orleans to do that to them. Then, 2019, they had their run through to the Western Conference Finals. And then got swept, by the Golden State Warriors. And then the last two seasons, last year getting bounced 4-1 by LA, and then this year being bounced 4-2 by Denver. It's the Damian Lillard show, but it's got to be more like that. And the way that this the end of this season has sort of panned out for them, the club. The Trailblazers and Terry Stotts, who's been there for the past 9 seasons, have decided to mutually part ways.
That's funny. Yeah, funny because the way they say mutually part ways. But
mutually part ways, or if you have Charles Barkley's opinion, which we probably shouldn't really delve into too much, but I guess he's got a different opinion on that too.
And look, I will say you're right. Now, just speaking of Terry Stotts, I don't think that's the only issue at Portland Trailblazers. I think that's the start. As in, I don't think he was an issue, but I think they've got to a point. What did you say? 9 years he was there for the Portland Trailblazers. I think they've got to a point now is that they've kept the same front office, the same coach, the same team structure pretty much for the last 4 to 5 years. And you just named it all then. How quickly they get bounced out of the playoffs. Something needs to change. For them, this guy's name comes up all the time. And I listened to a podcast that he was on. And he loves it and hates it how his name always comes up in trade rumors. But this is CJ McCollum I'm talking
about. CJ McCollum.
He loves it, but he hates it. He goes, he understands why. Because, he knows as well as everybody how good Damian Lillard is. But their books next year, their books are higher next year than their current rate. They're on the cap.
That's the scary part of it. There's little to no wiggle room for them to advance themselves in whether it be free agency. They have to go out and the front office has to sort of work and to try and trade.
The only piece, unfortunately, is CJ McCollum because he's on $30 million next year, and then that'll creep to 33, then 35. But it's Dame's massive jump. So this year he got 31, then he jumped all the way to 43.7. So and that's not going anywhere. Then it's going to 47, then 50, then 54 in 24-25, which is fine. Like
that could be, and not so much. It's awesome. He's getting paid, and he is well deserved of that money. So, but it's whether or not that the NBA can increase the salary cap by the time that they get to those contracts, and then teams will have that little bit of extra flexibility, or will his contract eat up that much out of the salary cap if the salary cap doesn't go up, as you know, significantly over the next 5 years, you know, for all franchises? And if it could be that by the time it gets to that in the next 4 years, that's crippling,
because everybody's on the books next year except for the rest of the contracts. And this is why CJ's make so sense. The rest of them aren't too bad. You got Covington at 12, Yusuf Nurkic still at 12, and you know, injury riddled Yusuf Nurkic hasn't really lived up to what I think, but anyway, Norman Powell at 11.5, Derek Jones Jr. at 9, and then Anthony Simons at 4 million. The rest is Zach Collins, Enes Kanter, Carmelo Anthony. They're all not contracted next year. So, and that's what I mean. And they're still going up $1 million more than their previous cap because of Dame. So I don't honestly think they have an option but to look at trade pieces for CJ. I can't think of anything else for them to do. They can't go on the free agency market.
No, the free agency is essentially out. It's because you're not letting a whole lot of big contracts go. Like you said, if you let Carmelo Anthony walk, it's minimal. It's a few guys like that. It's, you know, they made trades over the past couple of years now, you know, for guys like Covington and Norman Powell, and it just hasn't really worked out. They're not your traditional, you know, larger power forwards. And, you know, your only inside presence there is Yusuf Nurkic. And then you've got, you know, arguably the best 1-2 punch, you know, backcourt in the league. And, you know, I certainly don't want to forget that, you know, Klay Thompson has sat this entire year. So that conversation will change next year once Klay Thompson teams back up with Stephen Curry.
I mean,
but we're talking about the here and the now. So, like you said, you think the only option is CJ McCollum. I think that they could maybe get something for Yusuf Nurkic, maybe try and get a bit younger, get some picks, and try and build it in that regard. I think that could be the only other way. I think Robert Covington was a huge disappointment for them once they traded for him, and that could be another trade piece as well.
Or the other one, and I hear this around all the time, and they're only saying it because of the amount of money and because of his age, is do they then float the idea of Damian Lillard getting traded? I hear it. I'm not saying I like it, but he's 30.
Oh, no, I hear it.
He's 30 years old as well. So any team will just give him.
They could go nuclear and just go, right, that's it. Just blow the whole thing up.
And he could command, I mean, obviously a lot of picks, but he could command two or three pieces for them and just sort of young pieces and start again. So I don't know. Out of all the teams that we're talking about today, they're the ones that stood out. I don't know what they do, because they're salary cap stricken, and they're the runner back, which is probably going to be their best option, really, at the end of the day. Or they start floating the idea of trading CJ or Dame, because that's all they can do. That's literally all they can do. And like you said, probably Covington is, you know, if you wanted to make up some salaries. But I don't know. I'm assuming it depends when we find out what coach they have and how much input. If he doesn't have any input in the coaching, this is Dame, who gets the head coach there, then that might be an indication of maybe he's looking to sort of possibly move on.
Could be out the door.
Yeah. Next one was,
crazy that game five, like how insane were those two buzzer beaters by Lufiers? You know, just you want to see the heart and soul of the Portland Trailblazers at the moment, but you're just like, good God, like
he is the heart and soul.
You see the things that he can do, like, do you know what I mean? Like, this is his highest scoring postseason average in his career.
Yeah.
Like this is his highest field goal percentage of you know, throughout a playoff series, and granted it was only six games of his career. Like it sounds ludicrous. He's averaging 10 assists in this playoff run against Denver. Like he's 34 and 10 assists. Like everything goes through him, whether you know, how much longer? And he come out and said on Instagram, how much longer can I go through this? How much longer can we continue to do this? So, and it's the same sort of thing as Memphis. Is Portland a destination for veteran free agents to maybe go there on a minimal contract to try and help out? We've seen Carmelo Anthony do that, but I think his presence there has been really good for them. But when can he continue with? To me, that their game is extremely ISO centric. If that makes any sense.
Yeah, it does.
Lillard loves to go ISO. CJ McCollum loves to go ISO. Even though Lillard is averaging 10 assists per game, he loves the ISO ball. Carmelo Anthony loves the ISO ball. Loves the ISO ball. So it's a fact of, could you shift, like you said, if you shift CJ McCollum, then you've got to get a ball distributing point guard to go there who can facilitate and not have to do everything like Damian Lillard does. Yeah, and that's got to wear a man down after so many years.
Yeah. Next playoff series was Phoenix. Look, just at the end of the day, after game four, they did the last two games, they dominated the Lakers. They really dominated the Lakers in those last two games, especially game five. My God, they dominated us. It was well done. It was Devin Booker exploding just to show everyone, like, you know, don't forget about me. But we talked about this guy and thought he might actually get bully balled. But DeAndre Ayton was brilliant, absolutely brilliant in this series. And, you know, deserves all the credit because he did not stand down.
No, game one, I thought he did a terrific job on Anthony Davis, keeping him out of the paint, Andre Drummond keeping him off the boards. Yeah. And he was unbelievably efficient. What did he have, 21 points on 10 of 11 shooting and 16 rebounds?
Yeah.
In that game one. And I thought that was, and not to take anything away, you know, Devin Booker had 34 points. And this is all, especially at the start of this series, with a less than 100% and a much less than 100% Chris Paul.
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly right. And I believe LeBron and AD are going in less than 100% as well. I'm not making any excuses. They still lost regardless. I mean, AD had to miss some games anyway. AD, we'll talk about in a second.
Well, it was the fact that Chris Paul got better and healthier as the series went on, correct. And Anthony Davis didn't.
Yeah.
And as crude of an analysis as that is, like that essentially ended up being the difference. AD tried to go in that game six. He couldn't. He didn't last 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, it was clear, and I have no idea how he was cleared to play in that game. It was medically. There's just no effing way in hell he should have been cleared to play in that game. It should have been, sorry, let's get this. Let's try and win this game, and then let's push it to a game seven. Maybe we can have you for that game. But it was clear and obvious that he was not right to go after that.
I honestly think it was clear and obvious after that first injury, not like after that one. You're right. He shouldn't have played at all. He should have sat out the series. This is going to be I think it's obvious, our centerpiece for the Lakers for the next six, seven, 8 years. Why, you know, we've already won a title this year. You could tell on the way we weren't going to win it this year. Unless LeBron got it in his ear, I do not know why he even played. I thought, well, just rest him. Let's get ready for next year, see what we got sort of from there. He didn't need to play. It was because if he keeps doing things like that, he's that money that he's on is going to be an absolute waste because he's going to be too broken.
Well, this year, and all well and good, like he should be thriving, and like you said, he should be becoming the centerpiece for the Lakers franchise. Been there 2 years now. So, okay, you have an adjustment period last year with playing with LeBron. And, look, he was good, and they won the title.
He was great in the playoffs.
That's right. He's good, and they won the title. That was terrific. But this was one of his sort of, I guess, down years statistically.
Statistically, yeah.
Since his second year in the league. Like, he averaged under 22 points a game. And that's not an indictment on him at all. Like, he is an absolute dominant superstar. Like, you've seen what he was at, at the peak when he was at the Pelicans, averaging nearly 30, over 50% from the field. He's starting to get into a rhythm with the three ball. This year, the three ball percentage was down, only shooting at 26%. His free throw percentage was down. His rebounds were down. Everything this year was down.
Every number was down on his career numbers this year. And I don't know if it was because he played 36 games, but you still get the averages from that. So that doesn't
count.
That's
half of this season. Enough.
Sooner or later, sooner or later, when LeBron's going to leave, he's going to be the one that leads this team. Like a Nikola Jokic. He's nowhere near a player like Nikola Jokic, but I'm saying Nikola controls that team. There's no reason why Anthony can't, because Anthony can shoot a three like Nikola, can rebound, can defend, distribute the ball when he needs to. That's what he should be doing.
He doesn't have the court vision.
No,
like
he doesn't.
Jokic
no,
does,
he doesn't.
But very, very few big men and very few people, period, have the court vision and attract the attention like Jokic does. But if you're Anthony Davis, you've just got to stick to your strengths. Like that's what it is. Like he's 6'10", he's got amazing ball handling skills for a big man. He likes to run the rims, but he can also do damage in the paint. He can play with his back to the basket. He can face you up. He's got for a big man, he's got an amazing floater. I don't know why somebody who's 6'10", 6'11", needs a floater, but he can hit the floater in the middle of the through the middle of the lane. He's developing that 3-point shot, which has taken him, 5 or 6 years for him to be able to develop that shot. He's got a good mid-range game. So it's 100% the health factor. The hell do the Lakers do moving forward? Like this team, they won a championship last year in extremely strange and difficult circumstances, but the fact of the matter is that the attrition was taken out of the playoffs last year, and I mean that by there's no travel.
Yeah.
All you got to do is wake up in your nice hotel room. It's all I get it. You're away from your family. You're in Orlando. You're not where your residence is. But all it is, you've just got nothing but to focus on the game. You get up. You go to practice, you go home, you hang out with your team. There's no attrition. After a game, geez, we've got to go get on a plane, and now we've got to go fly to Utah, or we've got to fly to Phoenix or somewhere like that. Do you know what I mean? There's none of that. It's just go back to your hotel room, get a nice night's sleep, a nice night's rest, and we'll see you tomorrow for a little bit of film. There was no attrition to last year, and the best team with the best player won, and a big part of that was Anthony Davis.
They're looking at their contracts and salary for next year, their only option, literally, I mean, they are tied up to wazoo. Their only option, except for, depending on what Dennis Schroeder does, I honestly think their only option in free agency, the one option they have, the only option is, if he was to, is signing Kyle Lowry, because that is the... That was the biggest difference I noticed in the playoff that Dennis Schroeder couldn't do. Kyle Lowry is like a Rajon Rondo. He can distribute the ball. He can defend like Rajon Rondo. That is the only option they have, and then have to run it back with the rest of the team because they can't afford anybody else.
Well, and that's right. I thought Schroeder was a really good pickup this year, but
he didn't play. He played pretty good. Like
but in certain moments when you need him to step up, he wilts.
Exactly. And the other one
This is probably the most pressure that he's had on him in his career. Yeah. Like, he's gone to this LA team with the pressure of, hey, you're going to be the primary ball handler. Not the primary ball handler, because obviously LeBron does that. But do you know what I mean? Like, this is you're going to be running this second unit, and there's a lot of pressure on this team. It's championship or bust.
And the next one, they have to work out what they want to do before we move on quickly, is work out what they see in Kyle Kuzma and what you want to do with Kyle Kuzma, because you're paying – it's $13 million. It's a great contract, but decide what the hell you're going to do with him.
He's going to want to get paid sooner or later, and does he want to get out of the shadow?
He's signed through till 23-24, so they've tied him up pretty nicely. But you're right, he needs to get out of the shadow. And he needs to work out what the hell – you know, he has these flashes, and he's a good player. It's just
I won't lie to you. When the trade went down for Anthony Davis, I absolutely wanted Kyle Kuzma and not Brandon Ingram.
Yeah.
Purely from a health perspective, Kyle Kuzma is healthy, doesn't miss a lot of games. Okay, this year I don't think a lot of people liked his hairstyle, but you know, each to their own. But I thought he had a lot more potential, because you seem that some of the numbers that he was putting up, obviously before Anthony Davis was get there, as you know, maybe a second or third option there, and he was on the trend up. And Brandon Ingram was hurt. He's still extremely slight of build. There's another one that just looks like it is impossible for him to put on weight. But he's slight of build. You could see the potential was there, but he hadn't quite lived up to it. He was coming off those blood clot issues in his shoulder. So health was a major, major factor. And who's to say that it won't be down the line? But, you know, obviously with last year, the way that it happened, Ingram got, most improved player. And, you know, his numbers have significantly jumped with the extra responsibility that he's been given in New Orleans. And hopefully he sort of continues on that. I don't know. And I think he's the guy that the fans of the Lakers are coming after. You know, how are you contributing to this team consistently?
It's true. Does he
embrace that bench role? I don't know. It's been 2 years now.
Maybe
that could be a part of it.
If he does embrace it, he can push for a sixth man.
Absolutely.
Nothing wrong with that. So
look, he can still be a major contributor. Look at Jordan Clarkson. He won the sixth man this year. You can be a contributor. You can still play 30 to 35 minutes for someone off the bench. You know, if have a look at somebody like Lou Williams, Jamal Crawford, those types of players. They all used to get big minutes off the bench. You know, okay, you don't get to start, but a lot of the times, and a lot of coaches will come out and say, it's not who starts the game, it's who I trust in the clutch and who I trust at the end of the game. Yeah. And if he can turn into a player that they can trust to have in the lineup to close games, then who gives a shit if he starts or not?
Yeah. Yeah, that's exactly
right.
I think
a lot of players need to improve. It took Carmelo Anthony two teams and a lot of criticism for him to get that bashed into his head and basically being bushed out of the league. And for him to come back now and play like he is for Portland, to embrace that bench role, and yet, okay, he's much, much further along in his career. But that's just the way it is.
And there's nothing wrong with it.
Look at in L.A., This is what he's going to be.
There's nothing wrong with it. Let me look at Look at the Utah Jazz. Look at their bench. Like one Joe Ingles. He was always starting. He's now on the bench. He's embracing.
He's a perennial starter.
So he was a perennial, and he hasn't whinged. He hasn't bitched. He nearly won sixth man this year. So.
Just go out there and do your job.
We'll quickly move on to the East. Philly, this one's still pretty straightforward. Philly dominated Washington, and they always were going to, in four games to one.
Look, the only real reason why it was 4-1 was they had That game four. Look, the Wizards in game four. Embiid went down, had a little bit of a partial meniscus tear. It couldn't have been too bad because he's back playing in the playoffs now against Atlanta. So it couldn't have been too bad. They got the job done in game five. Yeah, but this was a fairly sort of, I guess, sort of a convincing series for Philadelphia. I don't think that the Wizards were going to trouble them all that often. No, like, you know, no. that game four was probably the most interesting of that series.
Yeah.
It's just Washington just sort of junked it up a little bit. It a stop start sort of game. And that sort of took Philadelphia out of their rhythm. And obviously, you know, with no Embiid, he went down in the first quarter. Just sort of not so much an innocuous fall, but Robin Lopez sort of blocked him as he was going up for a dunk. And then he just had an awkward fall. His leg got caught underneath him a little bit and he landed on his tailbone. But it ended up being that knee injury but I think the big thing in this series is can Tobias Harris continue to do this throughout the play, like continue to put up these quarter numbers throughout the playoffs. And I think Seth Curry as well, like disregard. Nah. I think Seth Curry has to continue to put up good numbers as well for Philadelphia to have any chance.
I think he can, Tobias Harris. I like Tobias Harris. I think him having Doc there has been his biggest stroke of genius this year, because you can see he plays well under Doc, and Doc coaches him well. He's glaringly better than he was last year since Doc's been there.
Absolutely.
Just with Washington, before we move on, they're sitting surprisingly. There's two things they need to do. They need to work out if they're going to keep Bradley Beal or if he wants to stay there and then sign him to a max extension, because next year he's coming up to his a player option of 37. So you'd be signing him this coming season. Russell's probably just going to stay there and that's fine. But they're sitting, except for that stupid Davis Burton's contract of $75 million over the next 4 years. They're sitting pretty, like they're like 30, 40 million under the cap. They could, after that nice little run, and if Bradley Beal stays there, they could attract someone, very possibly.
It's possible that could be a destination for a third wheel to go there. Like the Davis Bertans contract, I think, was warranted, but he massively regressed this year. He was not as dangerous behind the three-point line at all this year. This series, Washington didn't shoot the three very well at all. I think it's almost like a parody of the Portland Trailblazers. Like, just absolutely everything has to go through Bradley Beal. Like, everything goes through Damian Lillard.
If that's the case, and while you've got Westbrook there, that again, another perfect place for someone like a Jared Allen to go, or John Collins. I think Jared Allen would be absolutely perfect there. Absolutely perfect. Because those two don't really defend that well, and Jared Allen is just a defensive presence under that ball. I'm a huge fan. That was the dumbest Cleveland one. If Cleveland keep him, they need to, I don't know what they're going to do, but he's going to regress by staying in Cleveland, Jared Allen.
A distinct possibility.
Yeah. But they're not looking too bad, purely if they keep going off that playoff run, because they surprised a lot of people to make the eight. They had that beautiful run we said last.
Oh, man, they finished the season unbelievable.
Yeah, they did.
To make a run to actually get to the playoffs is a testament to the way that they wanted that backcourt to play, like, you know, everything mm-hmm. goes through Russ. Russ continues to put up insane numbers. He had like a 21 rebound game. I'm pretty sure that was game four mm-hmm. In this series. Like, he's just one of the most unbelievable rebounding guards the league has ever seen. If he can continue to, you know, be, I guess, his explosive self, maybe so much, not so much dial it back a little bit, but be more of a facilitator. If they do get that you know, that quintessential third wheel there, if they can attract, you know, a high caliber star. I'm not sure who would have any interest, because you don't really hear a lot, you know, of stuff going around about Washington. They're just not in the national or international media a lot. So, you know, you have to really do a real deep dive into anyone that may have some sort of interest to go. I know a lot of teams have got interest in trying to pry Bradley Beal away
of course.
From the Washington Wizards, but nobody's really willing to go to Washington to team up with him.
Interesting you say that, because we'll talk about the next series and then the plethora of money this team has, but we'll talk about the team that actually won this series, the Atlanta Hawks, just, I mean, really stepping up, trouncing the New York Knickerbockers 4-1. And Trae Young, just, I mean, absolutely, you know, another guy that everyone kept thinking he'll be always remembered for that. Not, you know, that Luka Doncic sort of pick thing, if you know what I mean. Like, you know.
Oh, that will forever be tied to him always.
But goddamn, he played well in this series.
Oh, man, and he was it. He was lights out.
And you would too. He has swagger on that court when he's feeling it. I love it.
Yeah, when he's here, that's right. When he's feeling, man, he was telling the New York crowd to shush. He was bowing in Madison Square Garden. It's like, man, he has just elevated himself to being another hated man at MSG. But yeah, that's good for the game. Like, you need rivalries like that. You need, you know, you need sort of stuff like that. But to me, I think the overwhelming factor or the underwhelming factor was the most improved player in Julius Randle, who we all knew was going to get that, was an absolute tie fire.
Yes, he was. I don't know if it just I don't know if he balked in the moment or what happened. He did. Look, he finished a double-double, but it was only 18 points and 11 rebounds, not what he was doing during the season. So,
not a 30 and 10, a 30-35 point game or anything like that. He just could not get a rhythm. I think he was bothered a whole lot by Clint Capella. They sent their big guys after him, you know, guys like John Collins and Kevin Huerta. They sent those guys at him. He basically turned into a mid-range player. And hey, guess what? The ball's in my left hand, and guess which way I'm going to go? I'm going to go left. It's the same problem with RJ Barrett. It worked well throughout the regular season, but when teams play each other this many times, you're looking at that film for them and only them, and it's kind of easy to sort of work out. Like, some of these games were a bit of a slugfest. Like, the Knicks only scored 100 points twice in this series. The rest of it, they scored, you know, under 90, you know, 96 points. So it offensively, like defensively, like, they kept the Hawks fairly well in check. You know, only game four was the most in this series, where they scored 113 points. But, you know, only allowing Atlanta to, well, not so much like Trae Young is, you know, obviously the fuel there, but that's the big part of this is it defensively. Yes. And I think they missed Mitchell Robinson hugely throughout the end of the season, even though, you know, okay, they didn't have him for a lot of the regular season, but they missed him throughout these playoffs. They were too small. They didn't get enough out of Nerlens Noel on the defensive end.
No.
And Atlanta took advantage of that.
So this is the team that's going to be very interesting in the offseason next year, because they will go
in. Everybody, all the media. Yes. Hey, who wants to come to the Knicks? Everybody wants to come to the Knicks.
Yes.
And nobody ends up coming to the Knicks.
Before they had this brilliant season this year. Before.
No, I understand that. And
they are coming
there's
in.
Definitely a lot to like about their future at the moment. Like, you know, like I said, Julius Randle and RJ Barrett absolutely need this thing right here. And I'm pointing to my right hand. They absolutely need to get a different facet to their game, because they're so one-dimensional offensively. It's not funny.
They on a $115 million salary cap for the NBA, they are only coming in with $54 million next year. So they're going to have about $60 million to play with. Look, does
Rose want to hang around? Because Derek Rose was really good in these playoffs.
Well, he's not. That's
he was promoted to start by game three. They realized that they needed some spark, and they brought him in to start in game three, and he started the rest of the series.
They'll probably re-sign him, but except for Julius, RJ Barrett, Obi Toppin, and Kevin Knox, that's it. The rest of, that's all they have contracted. So they could do the same thing. I mean, the one glaring would be so interesting if they go, oh well, let's go after Kawhi Leonard. Let's see if he really wants to come here.
Well, that's right. You know, there's rumors going around that they're going to go hard after Damian Lillard.
I have heard that.
But to me, like you said, there's not a whole lot of contracted players left there. I don't know with what. Like, what do you throw at Portland that's gonna blow their skirt up and go, oh yeah, no, that sounds like a good deal. Like nothing.
You can't give them salary. You'd have to throw RJ Barrett and then just cap considerations, huge amounts. That's all you could do. But I don't know. I only say it this time because this is one of the first times. We say this every time that they'll be in the market, but this time people may actually want to go there now because of how well and overexceeded they were this year.
And that's the thing. It was an overachieving season. Can they continue along that pathway and continue to be they were one of the best defensive teams in the league, and that's no coincidence that Tom Thibodeau being there has created that narrative, and he's always been a tough defensive minded coach. So maybe he needs a change on his coaching staff to maybe sort of get a little bit more out of his players, offensive wise. But their big thing is they'll preach defense until the cows come home. And that's going to be, I guess, the mold sort of going forward. And it'll, like you said, it'll be who can they attract in, I guess, sort of a free agent market in the off season to try and pair up
It's a pretty depleted superstar or star free agency market. No. I mean,
but it's I don't think it necessarily has to be a superstar. It's like a lot of it just has to be the right complementary piece.
Well, see that. I mean, forever they. Now we're moving on quickly, but forever they were talking about he'll be ready to go. Alonzo Ball as well. That was always a name touted going to New York.
That's right. So. Them and Chicago, I think, with some of the biggest rumors going around that Lonzo could possibly, because he's a restricted free agent, so teams could go out there and make offers, and then then New Orleans would have to either match or he would go there. So I think that was a big part of what they might have thought could have been a future move, but those sort of rumors and talks have really died down.
Next series was Milwaukee sweeping the Miami Heat 4-0.
Look, I guess this was a revenge series,
yes,
I think, for the Bucks. For them to be unceremoniously dumped out of the playoffs last year in the conference semis by pretty much this same Heat team. The Heat made a few moves this year to try and get a little bit better. With the likes of Victor Oladipo and those types of players that they got there, which sort of was a little bit, disappointing. Like, they also got Trevor Ariza and Bielitsa there as well. So that was their sort of answer to say, hey, these are our playoff guys. These are who we're going to run with. And their play throughout this series was just horrible. Robinson was pretty much a shining light there. Bam was well below his best. Jimmy Butler was rotten. Tyler Hero was rotten, and the Bucks just came out blazing, and took them overtime in the first game, but just came out and just beat them to a pulp in the next three games.
They did. They especially that game too. They really ascended and just went, look, they it felt like they were saying, sorry, that was the fluke for you to try to come back and nearly beat us in overtime, because they absolutely dominated them in game two.
Butler's field goals in this season, like field goals throughout the whole series, 19 for 64. Yeah. Like, that can't happen. Yeah. Tyler Hero, 13 for 38. Like, they're guys that they leaned on and relied on heavily last year throughout the playoffs. And they were limp this year. Like, they just couldn't get out of their own way throughout this whole year. Like, it was a Miami team that we're all waiting on, and they had a good run to sort of finish off the season. And I thought that was the sign that a lot of people were sort of coming out and going, right, Miami are getting good at the right time of the season, and where can they go from here? And then they just got absolutely waxed. And it was a team that a lot of people were sort of crying for all year. Can they replicate what they did last year? You know, they had people out with COVID protocols all year, injuries all year. Goran Dragic didn't look the same as he did last year. It was just
There's a lot of
improvement. No, that's right. But just not a lot of improvement, I don't think, especially by their two young guys, and who I guess they touted as the future in Duncan Robinson and Tyler Hero, who they want to trade for James Harden.
That's what they need to work out, what they're going to do with those two, because they're coming up to team options. So the one that I don't think they'll re-sign Victor Oladipo. I don't think that's going to happen now, because he's coming off free agency. I think you go after someone like them to complement Jimmy. I think someone like Spencer Dinwiddie would be okay there. I know we haven't talked about Spencer Dinwiddie because he's been, you know, obviously injured the whole time, but he's still pretty young.
He's going to be that sort of fourth, fifth, sixth wheel there at Brooklyn at the moment. So I would think that he maybe
and he won't get the money there. So
that's right.
So I think he could be
a good fit for a lot of teams, but yeah, he could absolutely go down there and be, I guess, whether he wants to be a good replacement for somebody, because Goran Dragic, he's never been the most healthy player to start with. Do you know what I mean? And now it's starting the last few seasons.
The ones they signed.
To come and fight them in the playoffs, and that's where you need him. That's where you need him to be healthy.
The ones that you'd mentioned that they signed that are all coming off contract are all over 30. For Oladipo is 30, Dragic is 35, Iguodala is 37, Ariza is 35, Belitz is 33. So, catch us up with you.
Need to get younger.
Last series was the Brooklyn Nets, who beat Boston 4-1, and you know, goddamn, I think. What do you say? I don't think anyone. I think I'm on your bandwagon now. I think I don't want to say it, but I think who the hell is going to stop those three?
It's unbelievable, and just so much firepower for Brooklyn if they can get, you know, consistent play out of guys like Joe Harris. You know, Blake Griffin looks so re-energized there that it's not funny. Like, he absolutely did not want to be in Detroit. You know, with the way that they're going at the moment. He looks so refreshed and so rejuvenated that he's actually starting to, he could be a bit of a wild factor, and a contributor, to the Brooklyn Nets, way that they're sort of playing. But to me, I think there's no real Nets story in this. You know, the big three were always going to do what they're going to do. Mm-hmm. You know, Harden sort of hasn't really stepped up a lot in this series. He had a 41-point game in game three, but it's going to be who the hell's going to stop him? I think that the big story in this series was it's a bridge too far for Jason Tatum to try and carry this team.
Yep. Yeah, it certainly was.
And then losing Jaylen Brown at the end of the season was just they got hardly any contributions from Kemba Walker. It looks like he might be on the outer at Boston. That's what I've been hearing and what I've read. So
yeah, he might be on the outer, but
I don't know how much trade value he has.
What are you going to do? He's got $70 million on the books for the next 2 years. So what do you do? Who's going to take that on?
There'll be teams out there that will absolutely think they can get the best out of him.
Because they're like, when he came out with those knee injuries, and that's why Charlotte didn't end up signing him. I think that was a knee jerk move, to be honest, by the front office in Boston. A very knee jerk move of 5 years, $100 million. I mean, look, speaking of the front office,
they seen him there. They seen what he was doing at Charlotte, he was an all-star. That, and they're just like, well, we have to get this guy, and he's been extremely underwhelming there.
If anyone wants to take the contract on, like he could be a trade piece. The only other trade piece that they really have is Marcus Smart. That's it.
And he is a big part of what they do.
I know,
a great two-way player, but I think it's a matter of they have to try and maybe get something for Kemba Walker.
I think so. I mean, look, it's all going to start new for him. I mean, during obviously this playoffs, one Danny Ainge is, I'm going to do exclamation marks, retire, because I think he'll go to a front office somewhere else personally. And Brad Stevens has actually stepped up to the front office position now, so they'll be looking for a new coach. What are your thoughts?
Well, he is now in charge of looking for a new coach.
Well, that's right. So what are your thoughts of not so much Danny Ainge, but what are your thoughts on Brad Stevens stepping up? Too soon? Do you think it's fine?
Possibly. I don't know what sort of reputation he's got as as a front office kind of guy. And, you know, in recruitment and things like that. So he's been a college coach before. So he's got he's sort of got the basics tools of the trade, to be a recruiter.
And he probably just needs to, he's very soft spoken.
Yeah, so that's
he's
right.
not like well, Danny Ainge. Yeah. You know what I mean?
It's a strange step up for him.
It is.
I thought a lot of people thought he may go back to the college ranks, but now he's stepped up to being, in that front office role with a fairly prominent franchise in the Boston Celtics, who have got a lot of work to do if they sort of want to capitalize on what Jason Tatum is, like Donovan Mitchell, just absolutely his star is just shooting off into the sky so rapidly. That they have to do something now before
he is superstar material. He is there already. He's there.
He had a 40-point and a 50-point game in this series. Like it's a 50-point game in a playoff.
He is in a playoff series. I don't know. Yeah, they're a tricky one because firstly they've got to find a coach. And, there's talk about what I think we mentioned this in the last one, Chauncey Billups is an option, like a diversity sort of coach. They need to work out what they're going to do. I think the rest of the team is fine, but I think the two untradeables to me are Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum. And I think everybody else should be.
They're not going anywhere. They're your linchpins for the future. So
the rest should be on the market, and they should be. And he needs to be as apparently as well liked as he is in the dressing area. That he needs to be cutthroat. He really needs to be cutthroat and just say, well, sorry, I think Marcus Smart's going to be going. I know what you're saying, but I think he's on his way out. But they need to do something.
There will be a lot of interest for somebody like Marcus Smart. Absolutely.
Well, and that's good because I think that roster's a bit of a mismatch. So I don't know. I thought Al Horford. That was the one for me when it sort of went down. I don't know why they got rid of Al Horford. I thought he was very, very well liked and he played very well there. So.
Yeah, and look what's happened to him now. He's not even playing. So.
No, well, that's exactly right. We'll finish up, I guess, talking about and you said this before we got on. What the hell are the fans doing?
It's lunacy.
It is lunacy.
What the hell is wrong with people? Is this what happens when you get cooped up a little bit too much at home and you're not going to your actual job and you can do everything at home and then all of a sudden you forget how to act in regular social instances. Like, it's ridiculous. In Madison Square Garden, it appeared that somebody had spat at Trae Young. That person needs to be kicked in the face, his teeth kicked down his throat, never be allowed out in public again. That's disgusting. It's one of the most disgusting things that you can do as a human being in spitting at another player. Russell Westbrook gets popcorn dumped on him by a fan of Philadelphia, and Russ was pissed. Holy man. That if they had not have got a hold of him, that could have been another Malice at the Palace.
Oh, 100%.
No question about it, man. He was legit going to kill.
Even press conference, Bradley Beal said, you know, he goes, no, I don't worry about anything because I know if these guys try to come to my face and do it, it's not going to be what they think it's going to be. Like,
exactly.
Do they realize how big these guys are? Do they realize how big these guys are?
That's right.
These guys are massive. And I'm not just talking height. They are built like brick shit houses, literally.
Yeah, they had some fool at game four of the Wizards-Philadelphia game run out and try and touch the backboard. And he just gets flogged by security. It's just like, it doesn't make any sense. Like, the Ja Morant's family was in Utah, and they were just getting bombed with abuse in Utah. Yeah. That sounds like it's not so much a common occurrence, but yeah, that they just got a little bit of a reputation.
It was nice that actually, speaking of that one, it's nice that your Donovan Mitchell and that came out and just said, you know, obviously they support the Mavs, the Grizzlies and all that, because Ja Morant's father thanked Mitchell after that and just said, you know, said.
The next game, I think they comped them like a suite there, so they didn't have to put up with that sort of crap. So, that's fair enough. But I think it's just, to me, that's not on, whether that's a thing that's just sort of happening in society over there at the moment. Like, everybody's at home. Everybody who can do their job from home is staying at home. And they just really have forgotten, you know, the fabric of society and being able to act not like a complete idiot in social situations like that. Like, just get the F over yourself. And, yeah, okay, well, you've been let out a little bit now. Go back. Do your job, drive to work, do your job, come home instead of just being cooped up at home, living in fear of this virus, and just go about your normal life, and, you know, social skills will come back, and that's just a product of what's happening. Yeah, just, I guess today, I think it's society, and, you know, I don't really want to get philosophical here, but, you it's a very, you know, sort of person-to-person contactless society now. Everything is text messages, phone calls, Skype.
Yeah, that's exactly.
You know, we're doing it right now, but do you know what I mean? There's not a lot of face to face in this new post-COVID world, and we need to go back to doing that.
People need to know how to actually interact, like do social interaction.
Interact
again
with a real human being that's standing next to them or standing in front of them instead of just staring at them on a screen or talking to them on a phone. Like how can we have forgotten that, how to act in social situations in reality so quickly? It's ridiculous.
Yeah. No,
I agree. The NBA has not stood for it. Like, those fans were – like, there was a fan in Boston that threw up an empty water bottle at Kyrie Irving.
Yeah.
Like, it's – I mean, and they dealt with those people swiftly and harshly.
You're not going to be able to go a game again. Like, what? Like, that's just ridiculous.
No, absolutely.
You don't even think.
Sorry,
anyway.
Sorry. Yeah. This arena, this game, and these fans that are normal, they're not for you. So, sorry, you're just not allowed to come back here anymore. I don't care if it's a one-strike policy or not. Sorry, you act up in a social situation like that, you're done.
That's right. Well, that'll do it for this first round of the NBA playoffs. Right now we're in the thick of the semifinals for the Eastern and Western Conference. So there's been a few games, but we'll go over that in the next round. Some of these series look interesting, so we'll talk about that. Please watch the games. There's some very, very good games going on. So, and it's good hearing.
Utah,
God, I love
Utah and the Clippers.
I love hearing the crowds. Don't you just love hearing the crowds?
Be really good.
The crowd reactions are so good. It's just so good to hear.
That's mean. It's mean. That's like I don't believe these fans. Like, it's so good to have real people in the stands again, and a lot. You know, the atmosphere is back.
And let's have real fans, yes, but let's also have real commentators there too, please.
No, sure, that's nice too. Like, I think they're slowly starting to get back to that. But Yeah, it's there. Can we all travel to the arena? Like it just goes to show that how expensive that must be for the big networks, you know, like TNT and TBS and ESPN, how much that actually must cost them if they're going to this sort of drastic measure and they think that that's cost cutting.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, don't forget you got all our socials, Twitter at Final Play Pod, Facebook's as always, and you can get our podcast as well on gimco.com.au.
And yeah, always big shout out to Mojo King and Dom. Yeah, thanks heaps for putting us on your platform there. We always get plenty of clicks from you guys. So always, thanks for the support with Eureka Sports Cards and Gimco. So yeah, it's always muchly appreciated. But we'll continue to do this. And we've got to talk about the debacle that happened last Wednesday night in State of Origin 1.
Yeah, we'll talk about that. Don't worry about that.
I'm not going to be very impressed with, but
we'll definitely talk about that.
Go through it nevertheless.
Yeah, well, no, we've plenty to talk about with that one.
Not really. No, I don't think so. You might have a little bit to say. I really ain't got much to say.
My name's Jason. Look, I have no idea who's going to win now. I'm J.R. Smith, because I have no idea who I'm going to pick. I'm still undecided on that.
No, I'm Brook. I'm Miles. I believe in Brooklyn. they just look so overwhelming, and it would be such a disappointment. Yeah, James Harden isn't there at the moment. Yeah, with a little bit of a hamstring issue, but it purely looks like it doesn't matter.
Doesn't matter.
Looks like Brooklyn by how many?
By how many? Yeah. All right. Have a good week, everyone.
All right. See ya.